Now, going on in Psalm 23, after giving that crucifixion millennial psalm, now he jumps into the terminology of a shepherd. So that's the way you're going to be a king in God's kingdom. If you're one of these sons of God that's made a spirit being, then this is going to have to be your attitude toward people. You know, there are three titles that God has given Christ as far as the shepherd. Now, he's called the good shepherd, he's called the chief shepherd, and he's called the great shepherd. So when you think of those titles, we'll be shepherds, but we're never going to be the chief shepherd or the great shepherd. We better be good shepherds. So here he begins then, and one I'm sure we all memorized, again a psalm of David, the Eternal is my shepherd. Of course, this is a compound word in Hebrew, one of God's names, Yahweh Roi, the Eternal my shepherd or king, I shall not want. So when you have the right kind of a king, he's ruling for your welfare. He's ruling so you don't want. He's not ruling to get. He's not ruling to for his advantage. And you know, when you stop and read the old records of Washington and Lincoln and men that were grafted into the job of the president of Manasseh, they had a gracious attitude, you know. They said, "Well, I'm not able to do that. I can't rule over a nation as great as this nation. You know, you have to get somebody else. I can't do it. I'm not going to do it." And they got grafted into it. Imagine that compared to politicians today. Vote for me. I'll give you this. I'll do that. You'll think you died, went to heaven, and you're in the millennium if you just elect me. And that's a lot of garbage, you know. You get sick and tired of hearing campaigns when somebody's running for election, because they all are going to rule you for their benefit. You ever known of anyone that got put in office that spent all of his wealth while he was in office? No, they build more wealth and build more wealth. And when they come out of office and they quote their wealth, it's dumbfounding how much they gained while they were in office. So they didn't do that for your benefit, you know. They're in there for their benefit. I was noticing in East Texas they had a listing of all the judges in all of East Texas and what happened to them when they got put into office. Now, their salary was only about $60,000 or $70,000 a year. But outside of that, you know, it gave their increase of wealth while they'd been off in office. And I think the least was only about $200,000, and they went from there on up. Well, how'd they ever get that being in office? You know, how does a judge make money like that? Well, maybe God's accurate when he talks about the unjust judge all the way through the Bible. But when God is your king and shepherd, you're not going to want. He's going to take care of you. Now, he makes me to lie down in green pastures. One thing I might mention in Psalm 22, you notice he didn't have any subscription on that one to the chief musician, because that is a personal type meaning in that Psalm 22. That's not for public singing. That's for you to study and meditate and sing at home if you want to. But you notice it wasn't devoted to the chief musician. It's a personal, individual message in Psalm 22. Now, going on in Psalm 23, it's the same thing, you notice. It doesn't have any subscription to the chief musician. So these next psalms are very personal psalms, and they weren't dedicated or written to the chief musician to be sung before the whole congregation. So these are individual. The Eternal is my shepherd, not the Eternal is our shepherd. The Eternal is Israel's shepherd. No, it's very intimate and very individual, very personal. The Eternal is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me. And that's progressive, you know. He makes me and continually makes me and always had made me and always will make me lie down in green pastures. And really, that doesn't have to do with color there. The Hebrew word means pastures of tender grass. And you know, if you get sheep in pastures of tender grass, they shouldn't trample it down. They should eat and lie down, and then it's still edible afterward and not stomped all down or trampled underfoot. He causes me to lie down in these tender grasses of pasture. He leads me, and the verb suggests rest, leading for rest. He leads me for rest beside the still waters. He restores my soul. Now, you know, how can you restore your soul? If it's immortal by itself, it doesn't need restoring. It doesn't flag and wane and run out, and then you got to rejuvenate it. But your soul is. Your soul has to be restored. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Now, when you think about that, if God's your shepherd, then for His name's sake, He's got to cause you to be in the paths of righteousness. Otherwise, you're going to have Him as a shepherd and bear false witness and go the way of evil. Yea, though I walk through the valley, not just into it, but in it, down in the bottom of it and up out of it. And this word valley is a word for a deep, shaded, real cool, low, deep valley. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil, because you're with me, your rod and your staff. And of course, the first is to beat off the ferocious creatures that attack sheep. The latter is for the benefit and the help of the sheep. So one is an offensive weapon, the other is just a tool of help for sheep. But the fact that the shepherd isn't a hireling, he'll lay down his life for the sheep. His rod and his staff, that causes the sheep to be comforted, to be secure. You prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Now that's still describing a shepherd's job of sheep being secure even when wolves might be around or mountain lions or snakes in the ground or whatever. A good shepherd can prepare a table for sheep right in the presence when all of the enemies are around him. Then a good shepherd anoints sheep's heads with oil because they get bruised and injured during the day. My cup runs over. So the whole thing is descriptive of a good shepherd. Surely goodness and mercy, there again, grace or love and kindness, follow us all the days of our life. Here again, though, notice it's individual. It's a private, personal one to memorize. All the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Eternal evermore to length of days. There's a little book that describes this 23rd Psalm. Of course, there are many of them written on Psalm 23. But the one I find the most descriptive and the most meaningful is one called The Song of Our Syrian Guest. And he describes the beauty of a shepherd in Syria looking after sheep. So here's the shepherd, a man of winsome mind, this Syrian guest. The spirituality of his culture was as marked as the refinement of his manners. We shall long remember him for the tales told that evening of his home in Syria on the slope of the Syrian mountains, but longest of all for what he said out of the memories of his youth about a shepherd song. It was out of the shepherd life of my country that there came long ago that sweetest religious song ever written, the 23rd Psalm. He smiled pleasantly, then with earnestness said, "So many things in the life of my people, the same now as in the days of old, have been woven into the words of the Bible and into the conceptions of religious ideas as expressed there. You of the Western world, not knowing these things as they are, often misunderstand what's written, or at least fail to get a correct impression from it. there's the shepherd psalm. I find that it is taken among you as having two parts, the first under the figure of shepherd life, the second turning to the figure of a banquet with the host and the guest. It's all a simple shepherd psalm. See how it runs through the round of shepherd life from first word to last. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. There's the opening strain of its music. In that chord is sounded the keynote, which is never lost till the plaintive melody dies away at the song's end. All that follows is that thought put in varying light. I wish it were possible to reproduce here the light in his face and the interchange of tones in his mellow voice as he went on. He talked of how the varied needs of the sheep are pictured with masterly touch in the short sentences of the psalm. Each is distinct and adds something too precious to be merged and lost. He makes me to lie down in green pastures, nourishment, rest. He leads me beside the still waters. The scene changes, and so does the meaning. You think here of quietly flowing streams, so you get one more picture of rest, but you miss one of the finest scenes in shepherd life, one of the rarest blessings of the soul that's led of God. All through the day's roaming, the shepherd keeps one thing in mind. He must lead his flock to a drinking place. The refreshment of good water makes the coveted hour of all the day. The spot where it is found amid the rough, waterless hills and the plains is the crowning token of the shepherd's unfailing thoughtfulness. And yet when you think of yourself as a spiritual shepherd, you've got to always remind people of the water of God's Spirit, not doing things on their own, and always drinking in of the water and washing themselves with the water, and out of their belly flowing rivers of living waters. When at last the sheep are led beside the still waters, how good it is after the dust and heat of the sheep walks. Would you get the shepherd meaning here? Then remember that streams are few in the shepherd country of Bible lands. The shepherds do not rely on them. Even where streams are found, their beds and banks are usually broken and their flow rough. Sheep are timid and fear a current of water, as they well may, because they are easily carried downstream because of their wool. Poor things, how do they ever get a good drink? The shepherd sees to that, doesn't he? His face beamed with winsome relish of these tributes to his success. Yes, the sheep would indeed have a hard time finding water to drink, were it not that the shepherd sees to that. So you know, your job as a shepherd's always to remind people about God's Spirit and the source of their strength, and drinking in of God's power and not trusting to themselves. The playfulness faced from his eyes and the shadow of manhood's years was there. Brother, you and I have learned how much is in that question and answer. How would we get the refreshment we need in the rough world if the shepherd didn't see to that? But he does. He does. His face brightened again as he turned to the four blue eyes across the table. The little kid's listening to the story. Shall I tell you how the shepherd sees to it that the sheep have a good drink every day? There are wells and fountains all through the vast regions where the flocks roam. In some parts there are cisterns, though the sheep like the living water best. The shepherds know where these drinking places are, all through the treeless country where streams are few. It's a fine sight to see the shepherds bring their flocks beside the still waters at some well or fountain, while the wide, silent country over which they and many other sheep have wandered spreads all around them, and the full expanse of the sky arches over them. The shepherd makes a certain sound. All his sheep lie down and are quiet. And you know, in Palestine, they always graze sheep and goats together. We never saw them apart. They were always there, black goats and the white sheep. And when they come to the water hole, it's really weird. All the black goats are over here and all the sheep are here. I don't know why they do that, but, you know, they're always parted when it comes to the watering. And of course, they drink differently. The shepherd makes a certain sound. All his sheep lie down. Now, you know what Christ meant when he said, "My sheep know my voice." And how many different groups of sheep can be gathered around a watering place, and yet each group of sheep obey their shepherd? They don't listen to some other shepherd. And he may make a sound, and they just don't pay any attention. They don't do anything until they hear the sound of their shepherd, and then they do whatever that sound is meant for them to do. The shepherd makes a certain sound. All his sheep lie down and are quiet. Then he fills the drinking troughs. The bubbling of the fountain, or the current, if it be by a stream, is no longer there to trouble the sheep. They can drink now undisturbed. This is the delicate meaning of that word, still waters. As the Hebrew puts it, he leads beside the waters of quietness. Then the waiting sheep hear a whistle or a call. They never misunderstand. They know their shepherd's voice and never respond to the wrong shepherd if several flocks have come up together. And strangest of all, the sheep come up by groups. The shepherd makes them understand. So in groups he leads them until they stand beside the still waters. And oh, how they drink with the shepherd standing near. After a pause, with a far-off look in his eyes, he said, "It's a beautiful scene, so beautiful that John has used it in picturing God's family or God's kingdom. The Lamb that's in the midst of the throne shall be their shepherd and shall guide them unto fountains of waters of life." No one spoke as he sat turning his teacup. A tear started from his dropped eyes. Presently he seemed to recall himself. But I must tell you one more thing that comes to my memory whenever I read the words, "He leads me beside the still waters." It would make a beautiful picture if someone would paint it. Up in the mountainsides of Lebanon, where my kinsmen have long been shepherds, often there are no regular drinking places, such as the wells and fountains on the plains. But as the shepherd leads his sheep over the rough slopes, he finds many a spring and sees its rivulet noisily running down a crevice. His sheep need water. They cannot drink from the leaping little stream. What does he do? He finds a suitable turn of nook in its course. He walls it up with a little dam and so holds the water till it forms a quiet pool. Then right there on the open hills, he leads his sheep beside the still waters. I know of nothing more fit to picture the shepherd's care of souls that trust him than that scene up there on the mountainside. "He restoreth my soul." You know, he said, that soul means the life or oneself in the Hebrew writings. There are perilous places for the sheep on all sides. They seem never to learn to avoid them. The shepherd must ever be on the watch. And there are private fields and sometimes gardens and vineyards here and there in the shepherd country. If the sheep stray into them and be caught there, it is forfeited to the owner of the land. So, "He restores my soul" means the shepherd brings me back and rescues me from fatal and forbidden places. "Restores me when wandering" is the way it's put in one of our hymns. That's exactly, "restores me when wandering." He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Often I've roamed through the shepherd country in my youth and seen how hard it is to choose the right path for the sheep. One leads to a precipice, another to a place where the sheep can't find the way back. And the shepherd was always going ahead, leading them in the right paths, proud of his good name as the shepherd. Some paths that are right paths still lead through places that have deadly perils. "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death," is the way the psalm touches this fact in shepherd life. This way of naming the valley is very true to our country. I remember one near my home called the Valley of Robbers, and another, the Ravine of the Raven. You see, the Valley of the Shadow of Death is a name drawn from my country's old custom. "For you are with me." How could more be put into few words? With the sheep, it matters not what the surroundings are, nor how great the perils and hardships. If only the shepherd is with them, they're content. There's no finer picture of the way of peace for the troubled in all the world. And I can't read that ever without thinking about God's ministers and, you know, real good ministers that are always there when they're needed, 3 a.m, are always out visiting and serving and thinking and teaching and preaching. And this is a great chapter to picture the concern and care of a minister. To show how much the presence of the shepherd counts for the welfare of the sheep, I can think of nothing better than the strange thing I now tell you. It's quite beyond the usual, the daily care on which the flock depends so fondly. Sometimes, in spite of all the care of the shepherd and his dogs, a wolf will get into the very midst of the flock. The sheep are wild with fright. They run and leap and make it impossible to get at the foe in their midst, who at that very moment may be fastening his teeth in the throat of a helpless member of the flock. But the shepherd is with them. He knows what to do, even at such a time. He leaps to a rock or hillock that he may be seen and heard. Then he lifts his voice in a long call, something like a wolf's cry. On hearing this, the sheep remember the shepherd. They heed his voice, and, strange to tell, the poor timid creatures, which were helpless with terror before, instantly rush with all their strength into a solid mass. The pressure is irresistible. The wolf is overcome. Frequently he's crushed to death, while the shepherd stands there on a rock, crying his wolf cry. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. In all these things we're more than conquerors. Thy rod and thy staff, this also is true to life. The double expression covers the whole round of protecting care. For the shepherds carry a crook for guiding the sheep, and a weapon suitable for defending them. The rod and the staff, one for aiding them in places of need along peaceful ways, the other for defense in perils of robbers and wild beasts. This saying describes with the ease of mastery how much those words mean, thou art with me. And what shall I say of the next words, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. You should see the sheep cuddle near the shepherd to understand that word, they comfort me. The shepherd's call and the answering patter of feet as the sheep hurry to him are fit sounds to be chosen out of the noisy world to show what comfort God gives to souls that heed his voice. And those sounds have been heard in my country this day as they were the day this shepherd psalm was written. Now here's where you drop the shepherd figure and put in a banquet and lose the fine climax of completeness in the shepherd's care. It need not be said that we were eager listeners now. Thou preparest the table before me in the presence of mine enemies. I ought to think that the shepherd's highest skill and heroism should be lost from view as the psalm begins to sing of it, and only an indoor banquet thought of. The word for table here means simply something spread out, and so a prepared meal, however it's set forth. There's no higher task of the shepherd in my country than to go from time to time to study places and examine the grass and find a good and safe feeding place for his sheep. All his skill and often great heroism are called for. There are many poisonous plants in the grass, and the shepherd must find and avoid them. The sheep will not eat certain poisonous things, but there are some which they will eat, one kind of poisonous grass in particular. A cousin of mine once lost 300 sheep by a mistake in this hard task. And you know, you can stop and think about how many parallels in the last 10 years where men were hirelings and not shepherds, and men didn't warn when wolves were coming. And you know, when you think about all that's pictured in that psalm, boy, there's a lot that's happened in the last 10 years that tie right in with it. Then there are snake holes in some kinds of ground, and if they be not driven away, the snakes bite the noses of the sheep. The shepherd sometimes burns the fat of hogs along the ground to do this. Sometimes the shepherds find ground where moles have worked their holes just under the surface. Snakes lie in these holes with their heads sticking up, ready to bite the grazing sheep. The shepherds know how to drive them away as they go along ahead of the sheep. And around the feeding ground, which the shepherd thus prepares, in holes and caves and in the hillsides, there are jackals, wolves, hyenas, panthers. The bravery and skill of the shepherd are at the highest point in closing up these dens with stones, or slaying the wild beast with his long-bladed knife. Of nothing do you hear shepherds boasting more proudly than of their achievements in this part of their care of flocks. And now he exclaimed with a beaming countenance and suppressed feeling, as if pleading for recognition of the lone shepherd's bravest act of devotion, "And now do you not see the shepherd figure in that quaint line, 'Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies?' What about anointing the head with oil and the cup running over? Oh, there begins the beautiful picture at the end of the day. The psalm has sung of the whole round of the day's wandering, all the needs of the sheep, all the care of the shepherd. Now the psalm closes with the last scene of the day. At the door of the sheepfold, the shepherd stands, and the rotting of the sheep take place. The shepherd stands, turning his body to let the sheep pass. He is the door, as Christ said of himself. With his rod, he holds back the sheep while he inspects them one by one as they pass into the fold. He has the horn filled with olive oil, and he has cedar tar, and he anoints a knee bruised on the rocks or a side scratched by thorns. And here comes one that's not bruised, but is simply worn and exhausted. He bathes its face and head with the refreshing olive oil, and he takes the large two-handled cup and dips it brimming full from the vessel of water provided for that purpose, and he lets the weary sheep drink. There's nothing finer in the psalm than this. God's care is not for the wounded only, but for the worn and weary also. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. And then when the day is done and the sheep are snug within the fold, what contentment, what rest under the starry sky. Then comes the thought of the deepest repose. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, as they have through all the wanderings of the day now ended. The song dies away as the heart that God has watched and tended breathes this grateful vow before the roaming of the day is forgotten in sleep. I will, not shall, but will, for it's a decision, a settled purpose, a holy vow. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Because he's the kind of a shepherd or king that would leave you never with a want. So after you consider the care of the good shepherd for you as the sheep, then you will. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Or you might say with Paul that you're persuaded that neither death nor life nor things present nor things to come will be able to separate you from the love of God that's in Christ Jesus. So you say, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. The song ends, the sheep are at rest, safe in the good shepherd's fold. Well, to me that was a very descriptive and a very brief picture of what that psalm gets across. Now, in Psalm 24, this one again ties between the shepherd psalm and the acrostic alphabetized psalm 25. You might notice Psalm 25 has 22 verses, and it's an alphabetized psalm. The only difference is that they leave out a letter and include the first letter, Aleph, twice, verse 1 and verse 2, both begin with the A. But let's go and get 24 that ties these two together. And once again, a psalm of David. The earth is the eternal's and the fullness thereof. Now, that contradicts a lot of teaching that men have brought in to try to mix up God's people in the past. You know, we had some men that began to look too strongly at God's way through the Jewish eyes, and they began to say that you don't tithe of anything except from Israel, and that those were national laws, and the Jews didn't allow a tithe from Babylon and from other countries. Only God's land was tithed on, and that's just a good Jewish way to get out of paying a tithe, you know, if you happen to be somewhere else. Well, how do they explain these kind of verses? Palestine is the eternals and the Jews thereof. No, that's not what it says. You know, if people read into that, we had one man that was so radical that he looked up the passage and it said corn, wine, and oil. Therefore, he said you don't tithe if you're a fisherman, and you don't tithe if you raise bananas. You know, corn, wine, and oil, that's all it says. Well, that's ridiculous, you know. If a person wants to understand, then he'd find out God always uses a three-term summary for various categories. But what would all be included in corn, wine, and oil? Well, one's the plants, and one's trees, and one's the, you know, it includes everything. Olive trees, and corn plants, and grapevines. Corn, wine, and oil. So it's a category. It's not to be taken technically. So all of a sudden, if that's the truth, you don't have any guys with olive trees, and nobody raises grapes, and nobody raises corn, you know, raise wheat, and you don't have to tithe on it. And be a fisherman and a miner, and, you know, you don't have to tithe if you're a miner. Well, you don't find that in the Bible. That's ridiculous. You know, those are carnal brains looking for loopholes to get out of God's law. But if somebody's converted, they don't want loopholes to get out of God's law. Well, there, another scripture I like to tie in with that is the one that says, the cattle on a thousand hills. You know, we should say, the cattle on the Palestinian hills are mine, says God. That isn't what it says. The cattle on a thousand hills. And you know, in Malachi, when God gave that chapter we are all acquainted with, he didn't say, will the Jew rob the Levite? You know, that isn't what it says. Will a man rob God? That's what it says. So that shows it's a universal law that applies to all of men. And when you do away with the Levitical priesthood, you don't do away with tithing at all. You just transfer it to the new priesthood. How anybody would argue around that is just carnality. Well, the earth, Heres, the earth is created, is the eternals. Russia, China, Brazil, Argentina, all of the earth that was created is the eternals. And the fullness, all that fills it, everything that's in it. And Paul quoted this in 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 26. The earth is the eternals and the fullness thereof. Now it's interesting, when you go back and see the reason God said Abraham should give from the spoil that he took from those kings, he said, blessed be God, the possessor of heaven and earth. Remember that? That shows why he had tithe. It all belonged to God. He was the owner of heaven and earth. So anything he gathered out of heaven and earth, he owed God 10% of. And that's why he gave that tithe to Melchizedek. The earth is the eternals and the fullness thereof. The world, now that's a different word there, Tebel, inhabited territory, and they that dwell therein. That has to do with people, citizenry. The earth first has to do with the ball, the globe, the soil, the earth. For he has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the floods. Who shall ascend into the hill of the eternal? Or who shall stand in his holy place? Now here again is that word, stand. You're not going to have to hide and run. You can stand. You can be in God's presence as you are on holy days and on the Sabbath. And when he comes back, you can stand and rise up. The word actually means here, rise up in his holy place. Well, he's going to just tell you who can ascend to Zion and stand in God's presence.